Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Al.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our Patreon donors. If you're interested in becoming a Patreon donor for the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, visit our official website at bodybuildinglegendshow.com. And in the upper right-hand corner, you'll see the link to becoming a Patreon donor yourself. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding and we talk about the history of bodybuilding. I'm your host, John Hansen. On today's show, we are going to have part two of our interview with John Defendis, who was the 1988 NPC USA winner. And John won this contest after a five-year layoff. John was a top teenage competitor in the 1970s. He had a remarkable physique for a teenager. And at 20 years old, John took third place in the 1979 AAU Mr. USA contest. And then he did not go back to the national level again until 1988. So it was really a remarkable comeback. And that's going to be what we're going to talk about today on part two of our interview with John Defendis. So that'll be coming up in a minute. When we get finished with our interview with John, I'm going to read an article from the December 1988 issue of Flex Magazine. This was the magazine that I read from last week as well. That was an article about John Defendis winning the title. This one is about the actual contest itself, the 1988 NPC USA, which took place in Las Vegas. It was one of the biggest NPC contests in the history of the NPC up until that time. It was a really, really tough show. Competition was absolutely amazing. And John won with a unanimous score, all first place votes. So it was really a fantastic victory. So I will be reading that, as I said, as soon as we finish our interview with John. All right. Happy 4th of July, everybody. Today is the 4th of July. I hope you guys are celebrating and having a great holiday weekend with your friends and your family. Hope the weather is cooperating out here in Tampa. It's we get storms every day in the summer, so it looks like it's raining again. But beautiful weather out here. Very hot, as usual, in the summer, but great weather. Today would have been Sergio Oliva's birthday. Sergio was born on July 4th. If the records from Cuba are correct, Sergio died about 10 years ago, I believe, in 2012. So Sergio would have been 82 years old if he still would have been with us. So happy birthday in heaven to Sergio Oliva, one of the greatest bodybuilders ever, the myth, one of the greatest. I also want to give a belated birthday to Frank Zane. It was his 80th birthday on June 28th. I forgot to mention it on last week's show. So happy birthday to Frank. 80 years old. So I would love to do another interview with Frank. Maybe I can reach out to him again and get him on the podcast again this summer. I think I interviewed him like 2 years ago, and it was one of my most popular, most listened to podcasts, of course. But back then I was doing it by phone. So I would love to get Frank on a Zoom call and do it on video. So I will work on that. This is our fifth anniversary. Our very first podcast for the Bodybuilding Legends podcast was on July 5th. 2017. So this is 5 years now we've been doing this podcast. So thank you to all of you who have listened to the show, especially those who have listened since we started. But even if you just started listening, welcome to the show and thank you for supporting the podcast. I do want to thank again our Patreon donors. You guys are the ones that keep the show going. We don't really have any sponsors right now. So thank you to our Patreon donors. In return for your donations each month, I'm trying to do something special for you guys every week. So this week, I sent out our Patreon donors a video of the 1966 Mr. Olympia contest. This was the report that was written in, I believe it was the January 1967 issue of Iron Man magazine by Franklin Page. And this was the contest report of the 1966 Mr. Olympia, Mr. World, Mr. America, and Mr. Universe. So this was a contest that Larry Scott won his second and last Mr. Olympia. And Sergio won the Mr. World. That was his IFBB debut. Dave Draper won the Universe. And Chet Yorton won the Mr. America. And that was right before he went over to London and competed against Arnold at the 1966 NAVA Universe to show that Chet won. So I made a little video of it, and I read the report, and that is out to our Patreon donors. So thank you guys for your support. And again, if you guys want to be a Patreon donor, just go to bodybuildinglegendshow.com website and you'll see the link right in the upper right-hand corner. All right, I was at the Orlando Europa last night. This is a big contest that is held in, of course, Orlando, Florida, by Ed and Betty Pariso. And they had a men's pro bodybuilding. It was won by Hassan Mustafa, who was a super, super thick bodybuilder. And Hassan competed in a lot of shows last year, but was just never cut enough, never ripped enough. So he has now a new coach, AJ Sims, who I actually worked with AJ when I competed in my last contest in 2016 out here in Florida. So AJ found the winning formula for Hassan, and Hassan is now ripped, and he's got so much incredibly thick muscle. These guys are so big, you have to see them to believe them. They look totally different than the bodybuilders 30, 40 years ago, of course. But Hassan doesn't have the greatest structure. He's kind of straight up and down, short legs, but just you can't deny his muscle mass. And as soon as he dialed that in and got in condition, he was definitely a winner by far. So this was his second victory. He won the Puerto Rico Pro about a week ago. And I think he's going to do the Arnold Classic in Europe. So he's going to do one more show, and then he'll get ready for the Olympia in December, which will be in Las Vegas. And I intend to be out there. So that should be a good show. Back to Vegas. Hasn't been to Vegas in 3 years since the pandemic started. So that should be fun. I've got a couple emails I want to read. I also want to mention I'm working for Pro Physique. I'm doing online coaching for them, and they have a transformation challenge coming up on August 1st. It'll run through October 30th. So it'll be 3 months to change your body, transform yourself, and it's a contest. So you'll be competing against other people, and they have really good prize money for the winner. So it might be looking into if you're tired of your dad bod, if you're tired of sitting around over the summer and getting fat and you want to get in shape, go check that out. And I've got the link right below. So just look at the link and click on that and you can sign up. And again, that'll start August 1st. And if you'd like for me to be your coach, just suggest for me to be your transformation coach and I will help you get there. And I want to mention our muscle maturity podcast that I'm doing for Old School Labs. I'm doing this with Samir Banute and Nick Trigilli every week. It is on every Tuesday on YouTube under Old School Labs' channel. So if you'd like to check that out, I actually might be a one day late this week because I think we're skipping the 4th of July, which we normally record on Mondays, and we're going to do it on Tuesday. So it'll probably be up on Wednesday. So check that out. We talk about a variety of subjects, what's going on in the bodybuilding world. And of course, we always talk about some old school stories. Samir's got a ton of them and I've got a lot too. So that is on YouTube every week. All right. I got a couple emails. If you're interested in sending any emails, just send them to naturalolympia@gmail.com and I will read it on the air. All right. This one says, hey, John, just stopping by again. I always enjoy your podcast. I love how you always have the information of past bodybuilding events at your fingertips when you're interviewing people. Very well done. I am greatly enjoying your MP6 training book. As I mentioned in another posting, I started your MP6 program last August 2021. So not too long at it, but I've seen solid results. I love how you have everything well laid out in the book and you provide examples to guide people. Great job. For me, it is truly one of the best weightlifting training books out there. You should get more praise for this well-done training book. I've read through it at least 3 times now with various underlining. One question, do you continue to take flaxseed oil every day? 2 tablespoons a day. I've been taking 2 tablespoons each day and I've noticed a reduction of inflammation. What is your main reason for taking it now? Thanks. Also, I'm looking forward to your new book about getting fit at 58 years of age. I'll be buying it if you provide a hard copy, that is. I like having a hard copy edition. Hey, just an idea, but maybe you could do some podcast interviews with your guests and only focus on training and nutrition. I know you've touched on it in some of your interviews, but maybe re-interview previous guests with the focus just on what they are doing with their training and nutrition now at their current age. I think many or most of your listeners would find that quite interesting and helpful, especially on how you focus on getting to the brass tacks of a subject or point. Thanks again, John, for all you do with the podcast. They are a great listen. Take care, Dan. All right, Dan, thanks for the email. Let me see what your questions are. Well, first of all, I'm glad you love the MP6 training book. I still follow that program as well, so I'm glad you're liking it. Thanks for the plug there. The flaxseed oil, yes, I do occasionally take it. I don't think I take it as much as I used to. The reason I took it was because it's a great source of omega-3 fatty acids. So I would especially take it on the days that I didn't eat salmon, because salmon is also high in omega-3 fatty acids. And when I'm dieting, I watch my fat intake, of course. I'm counting up my macros. So I'm only eating like maybe 50 or 60 grams of fat. So I have to kind of limit it, because I think there's like 13 grams of fat in each tablespoon of flaxseed oil. I also take this stuff, it's called kidney stuff, and it's also high in flax seeds. So I take that as well, and I put that in my protein drink. So between those two, I'm usually taking the flaxseed oil at least a few times a week. What else did you? Oh, yeah, the training and nutrition emphasis in the interviews. I think that's a great idea. I'm supposed to interview John DeCola. I interviewed John a couple of years ago, and I don't even know how old John is now. He's got to be in his 80s, I think. He's in an unbelievable shape. And so I would definitely like to talk to John and go really into detail about how his training changed. We talked about this with Tom Terwilliger and Tony Pearson and Phil Williams when I recently interviewed them a couple months ago. So I'd love to talk to John about that. And for any of these guys that are training hard when they get older, you know, I think that's a really fascinating subject. So thank you for that email, and I will definitely look into that. This one says, hey, John, I just saw your training points for 7 back exercises and the video for critical bench. I was freaking stoked. Your mass shape and form were crazy inspirational. I am a 55-year-old Marine Corps veteran. I've always been an amateur gym rat. I have to work around a few back injuries and age, but I am in great shape. But you, my friend, just blew my mind. I started lifting when I was 12, when my mom bought me a cement-filled weight set from Sears. I started following all the greats, and I continued most of my life. However, I never really followed the natural bodybuilders. Now that I've seen you at age 59, I know what I've missed out. Thanks for your inspiration. I look forward to learning more about you and your journey. Inspired, Bud Million. All right. Thank you, Bud. Great email. Appreciate that. Yeah, I've done a lot of videos for this company called Critical Bench, so you can find them on YouTube. And the good news is I am going to start doing more training videos. I just bought a camera and a mic and a tripod, and I've got all my equipment. So I am going to start putting the effort into going into the gym a few days a week and start filming more training videos, more nutrition videos, and it will be an emphasis on how to stay in shape after 50. So look for that on my YouTube channel. If you're not subscribed to my YouTube channel, it's under my name, John Hansen. So go do that right now, and then you'll be getting these videos as they start coming out. That will definitely be this month. I've got the equipment. I just got to make the time and do it. And I've got my computer working again too. That was down for a while, but so I will be able to edit my videos and put those up. So thank you for the great email, Bud. I appreciate that. Thanks for your service as a Marine Corps veteran. I'm sure you're in awesome shape. Okay. I think that is all I got, guys. So here is our interview, part two of our interview with Mr. John DeFendis about how he won the 1988 MPC USA after a 5-year layoff. Here we go. I want to ask you about that 79 USA, John, that I think you referenced a little bit before. You got third place and you were only 20 years old. And this is the Mr. USA, the AAU. It was back AAU back then.
Yeah.
And you got third place in the medium height class. And Bob Reese was the winner and Les Galvin was second. So tell the story about that one, because I remember in the magazines in Ironman, you look great in that show.
Thank you. It was right before my 21st birthday. I was 20 years old, and I went in. It was in San Jose, California. Bob Gruskin and I flew out, and Bob was, helping me. Bob was always a instrumental in any success that I had. Him and Steve, I had the yin and the yang, the crazy man and the sensible guy.
Right.
I laugh today when people think, oh, I'm going to do it on my own. You really got to have good people.
Yeah.
God blessed me with the right people, and the contrast really worked. When we went to the 79 USA, I was in really phenomenal shape, and it was me and there was Larry Jackson. You remember Larry Jackson?
Yeah. He was fourth, right?
He was fourth. He was a monster. When I saw Larry Jackson, I was like, I really packed my bag and go home, because he was just tremendous. But Larry had a couple weaknesses, and because of the weaknesses, I was able to get by him. But in the over, when they were judging the overall, Laura Class, which is really was the overall, because Bob won the overall. I had first place votes, I think all first place votes, and then I had a Peary Raider, who owned Iron Man magazine, put me seventh, and Mabel put me ninth.
Wow.
And they always drop the low and the high score, so they dropped right. one of my ones, and they dropped the nine, and that seven dragged me down to third place.
Jeez. You
know, Wes Galvin and Bob had twos and threes, you know, all mixed in.
Yeah.
And a couple might have been a four in there somewhere, but had I not had that seven, had that seven been a two or maybe even a three, I would have won the show.
Yeah.
But instead, I lost because of that. They dropped the nine and kept the seven.
Wow. Unbelievable.
I wasn't, and you know, and Bob was upset. Bob was really upset all the way home. He was like, you should have won that show. You should have won that show. He was really upset. And I was just happy I was going to eat.
Yeah, right.
I was like, I took third in my first national show.
Yeah.
Well, I just want to eat. Just give me something to eat. You know, it's like, yeah. You know, it is after a show. You just want to get something
right,
to eat.
Right. You know?
So I wasn't disappointed because the experience was unbelievable. I learned a lot to be around such great champions like Bob Reese and Les Galvin. I think Les Galvin was Danny Padilla's training partner.
Yeah, I remember seeing him in the international a few times.
But they were great champions, and Larry was a great champion. I mean, I was thrilled to be able to get by him. And same thing in the USA when I won the USA, the class was incredible. I mean, Johnny Moran. You see Johnny Moran, he was just phenomenal. Yeah,
I mean, monster. I know.
He was a monster. You know, that Franco Santariello was in that show. Johnny Moran.
Yeah.
You know, of course, Troy Zuccolato, who was phenomenal. I mean, I was, you know, fortunate to get by Troy. He was great, great physique, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I think that, you know, I was able to really edge him out on shape. You know, I won the USA unanimously, which I was very fortunate about. The crowd wasn't happy because it was in Vegas. And, you know, I was coming from Florida, so I was the East Coast guy against the West Coast.
Yeah.
But Troy was a great competitor, an incredible human being. I love him. Phenomenal, Troy Zuccolato. He's just phenomenal, incredible businessman.
Yeah.
I couldn't be happier. And he came back the next year and won the Nationals, and
well-deserved.
Right. And then he did his thing with, anti-aging, and he's very successful.
Very successful.
And deserves to be. I mean, he's a hard worker and a good man, you know?
Yeah. Plus, I bet a lot of people didn't know you back then too, John, because you were off for 5 years, and back then they were following the shows, and you know, it was like so hard to get a pro card. If you were second or third the year before, they were looking for you to be the winner the next year. You know, everybody had their favorites, you know, mm-hmm. going into the shows. And like you said, Troy, I think was second. Was he second in 87? Well, he was working his way up there, I think. You know, every contest. Yeah.
Nationals or USA, I think.
It was Sean Ray.
See, I was one of the favorites to win the 82 America. Well, that was the first year they made the turn to the Nationals.
Yeah.
And me and Rory Liedermeyer were in Muscle and Fitness all year.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember you guys were the favorites, yeah.
Rory was 300, I think he was 300 pounds or something crazy. He was a monster.
Yeah, he was crazy.
He was doing lateral raises with 120. I mean, crazy stuff that you've never heard of, you know.
Right.
315 good mornings, 350-pound good mornings, you know.
I mean,
just insane stuff. And I really admired Rory because Rory's eccentric. Let's face it, he's eccentric. He's off the charts different.
Yeah.
In a good way. And I really respected him. I went out to L.A. and, you know, I met him when he was the favorite and one of the favorites to win with myself. And I was, you know, I was in awe over his size.
But yeah.
I
said,
I got my work to do. And, you know, I feel like I could beat him. You know, I just got to come in great shape. And of course, he has incredible shape also, beautiful physique, one of the greatest. So I'm training for that show the whole year, and we get 6 weeks out, and I send pictures to Mannion. And Mannion said, hey, you know what? This should be your year. You look incredible. You know, I wish you the best of luck. And he said Mannion was really impressed with the pictures.
Yeah.
And then about the same time, it was about 6 weeks out, Gruskin did a photo session with Matt Mendenhall. And Gruskin was working with Matt. And So he said, yeah, I got Matt, you know, Matt's going in the show too. And, you know, he, Bob trained a lot of people, you know, he didn't play favorite. Yeah. He, Bob's thing was like mine was, is I'm going to get you in the best shape you can get in. And then you guys got to duel it out, you know?
Right.
So Bob said, yeah, I did some photos with Matt today. God bless you. Bless you. So I said, I did some photos with Matt today. And he looks pretty good. You know, I said, really? He goes, yeah, he's looking good. I said, hey, Bob, can you send me the photos? you sure you want them? I go, yeah, send them. So Bob mailed me the photos, right? It's about 5 or 6 weeks out from the USA, from the Nationals, you know? And I get the photos. I was married at the time. And I get the photos and I'm like this. I said to my wife, look at this. I can't beat this. The guy's triceps were striated like they cut him with a linoleum knife.
Yeah.
Matt never looked like this ever. Wow. Never looked like this in show shape. Never. I mean, this was a standard that it really would have been tough for Haney to beat what I was looking at.
This wasn't
the guy, and Haney's the great. Haney's great, but this wasn't the guy that competed against Haney.
Yeah.
And, I mean, completely striated triceps. Incredible shape, the best shape of his entire life. And I said, I can't beat this. I can't go in this year. I already took third. I'm not going to take third again. I'm going to take second or third. Yeah. I got to know I'm ready and I can beat everyone, you know?
Right.
And so I skipped out, and then Rory dropped out.
Yeah.
And then Haney beat Matt.
Mendenhall, yeah.
With well-deserved, Haney's phenomenal. So then that happened. That was 82. And then 83, I said, okay, I'm going to make a comeback. And, you know, I'm going to do the America. I got to qualify. So I flew out to LA. I got in great shape. I flew out to LA and I won the Western America.
Okay.
You know, that was in 83.
That was in Arizona, right, John?
That was in LA.
Oh, it was in LA. Okay.
Yeah, I lived in Arizona.
Oh, you lived in Arizona. That's right. Yeah. Okay.
I lived in Arizona at the time. I flew out. I won the Western America, the overall Western America that year. In 80, I won the Eastern America. I think some of those titles aren't on that sheet. There's several of them.
No, they're not. Yeah.
But the Eastern America I won in 1980 in Maryland.
Okay.
The Western America I won in LA. And then I was going to do the America that year. And then things happened. And I felt like I wasn't ready. And then from there, I moved to Florida.
Right.
Beginning of 84. And then I had to start a whole career over in Florida, you know, right. Managing gyms, training people out in Florida, the Palm Beach gym. That was, you see a lot of Palm Beach gym shirt stuff. Bill Daddio was the owner, great guy, him and his wife, Pam. So I worked there and I just trained. I trained twice a day, every single day. I trained at 7 in the morning and I come back. I trained from 7 to 8:30. Take a shower, eat, work from 9 o'clock to 8 o'clock at night. 8 o'clock at night, I'd do my second workout. I'd go home and meal prep religiously.
Wow.
Every day. And you know what? That's why I don't understand. You know, people want to succeed, but they don't want to put in the work.
Yeah.
I have lived this, lived fitness, training, bodybuilding, nutrition ever since I was a little boy. And it's my whole life. It literally consumes every bit of my life.
Yeah.
You know, and even, you know, the fact that, you know, I was divorced a few times, that was a product of my focus and tunnel vision, you know, there's going to be, you know, sacrifices you make and casualties, unfortunately, that didn't work out because, you know, I was the guy that was just working and doing what I do, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But in the, you know,
and when you moved to Florida and you were training twice a day, John, you weren't getting ready for anything. That was just your normal training.
Every year I was getting ready for something. Every year, okay. I was getting ready for the big show. And every year, not yet.
Yeah.
Not yet. I kept, you know, and you know what? That, a lot of that's Mihalik's fault because Mihalik was a perfectionist.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, he was a perfectionist. He was very hard on himself.
Yeah.
And Mihalik was a great bodybuilder in the off season. If you've seen Steve Mihalik, like we train and then he'd go in the locker room and he'd pose in the locker room. And if you've seen Steve Mihalik in the locker room in the off season, you would think there's not a human being on the planet that could ever beat this guy.
Yeah, that's for sure.
He was that good.
Yeah.
And then when he would get ready for a show, the guy would be eating tuna out of a can and training, you know, 5 hours a day.
Yeah.
And he'd burn the candle at both ends, and he'd overkill everything. And that's what really prevented him from being the champion he would have been. He was a great champion, but you know, he could have had an Olympia winner of several. You know, he was.
Yeah. I was going to ask you about that because I read in Randy Roach's book that Randy was writing about the Pumping Iron when they were filming Pumping Iron, and they were talking about like guys that could have been in the movie, and Steve was one of them. And he had a personality, you know, he would have been great in the movie. But yeah, it's weird that after he won that 72 America, he never really did. He go to the NABBA Universe? I don't think he went to the NABBA Universe, did he?
Oh, he won the Universe. Yeah,
he, oh, he did. Okay. Was it that year?
He won the USA and the Universe. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
USA, America, and the Universe. Yeah, back then they had, you know, they had separate USA, America, Universe. You know, then they changed everything.
Right, right.
Yeah. He did.
I'm surprised he never went to the. I know he competed as a pro later on.
Yeah.
But when he was younger, like after that 72 America, I'm surprised he. I was always wondering why he never went into the IFBB and competed against Arnold and Lou and those guys.
Yeah, he competed as a pro after I had left.
Yeah.
When I left, I went to Arizona, and then a couple of years later he competed, but. Yeah, Steve, you know, Steve was a very complicated human being. I call him the Charles Manson of bodybuilding. Because Charles Manson, you know, people was like, oh, Charles Manson, they were so afraid of Charles Manson. They go, Charles Manson didn't really do anything except he sent people out and they went and killed people.
Right.
He wasn't the guy that was.
He didn't kill anybody.
He could get in somebody's head.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, like whether it's manipulation, hypnosis, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
But when I say Steve Malik was the Charles Manson bodybuilder, I mean, he could get anyone to do anything.
Yeah. You know?
I mean, and that's how I was able to eventually, as a teenager, to do those 100-pound flies, because he literally instilled in me the belief that I could do it.
Yeah. And
forced me to do it. He made me, consistently made me lift those weights. And when I couldn't lift them to, you know, where I could lift them, but I could only do 2-3 reps where I could do 4, you know, and just kept saying, you know, no, you're not giving me 100%. You know, this is, you can do this, you know, and he could get you to believe anything. Anything. I mean, it's mind boggling, you know, not even good, you know, I mean, some of it was good, but not some of it wasn't.
Right, right.
But he could get you to believe anything, you know, but that, those roots with Steve, you know, my mother hated Steve, and to this day, she still, you know, does not like him. Matter of fact, the first time she met him was when we were both inducted in the Bodybuilding Hall of Fame. I said, Mom, this is Steve, and she had never met him in person. And she said, oh, I hate you. And Steve said, oh, well, that's nice, you know. And she goes, no, I'm not kidding. You tried to kill my son. You know, and I'm like, Mom, you know, I'm like, Mom, you know, but she did. But, you know, and I really never, I understood it later on because Mom's paying the hospital bills.
Right.
You know, Mom's paying the hospital bills. She's forbidden me to go back to the gym because the guy's trying to kill me in her mind.
Right.
Going back to the gym. So she did not like Steve Mihalik. And, you know, with Steve was very complicated, but. You know, several people will say he was abusive. That guy gave me the strength that enabled me to go through life and accomplish things that most people can't accomplish because of the will.
Yeah.
The will, just never to quit, to continue to forge on. And that if you don't quit, you have not failed. You know, you got to keep going. You know, once you quit, you fail. You know, but if you keep going, you're still in the process. So nobody can actually say you failed. You're still in the process. Just keep working, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But, yeah.
So finally in 88, John, that was the year you fired. You're ready.
That whole year I trained. Well, it's funny. 87, I went to the Nationals in New Jersey.
Sean Ray.
Sean Ray won that. So I go to the Nationals. Now, my friend Alex invited me to Nashville. He said, I'm going to pay your ticket. You know, I'll pay for the ticket. And Alex and Walter, two of my friends. So I said, okay, I go up there, right? I don't want to be at the National. I'm like, you know, because I'm more the sour grapes guy now, you know?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I didn't accomplish my dream. So there's part of me that's pissed. And really, yeah, I'm pissed at myself, but, you know, that's not what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
So I go up there and, you know, they got a bunch of beer in the room and they're drinking. Hey, man, yeah, drink. So I'm drinking. I don't drink, right?
Right.
I'm drinking, and then I go to the show, and I'm sitting there buzzed. And, you know, for a guy that doesn't drink, I have a beer, I get drunk, you know. So yeah, I'm sitting there buzzed, and they come out on stage, and I'm, like, trashing the competitors. You know, I'm so unprofessional. I'm just,
yeah,
this guy probably sold his car to buy drugs to be up there, you know. I'm like,
Yeah,
he's going nowhere. He's going to place ninth like I did at the Teenage America. And he's going to go home feeling like a loser. You know, I'm like real negative, you know?
And
the biggest thing, I was like, yeah, they probably spent every dime, mortgaged their home, you know, and, you know, so that they could be here at the show and they're not even going to place. And, you know, I'm saying this to, you know, my friends, you know, and then I flew back from New Jersey to Florida. And the next day I'm saying to myself, I got to get my shit together because I will be miserable for the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm.
If I don't accomplish my goal. And I knew it. And I had to find that headspace. So I took a 2-week vacation and I went to Arizona.
Okay. And,
you know, 'cause Arizona was where I had been the years I was training out there. Went to Arizona. I rented a townhouse in Scottsdale, and I trained. I trained at the gym out there, and I would take long drives up into the mountains, and I would just really. And I took pictures of the mountains all by myself. Spent 2 weeks completely by myself.
Okay.
Just really contemplate. As a matter of fact, I don't even think I trained for those 2 weeks because I'd come off that trip to New Jersey, so I hadn't trained. I just got away from everything, and I got this clear headspace, and then I flew back to Florida, and I said, I'm ready to do what I got to do. And I trained for the whole year for the show, for the ADH show. And then 6 weeks out, Gruskin comes out to look at me. He flies down from New York to look at me. So I pose, I put my trunks on, I pose for him. I said, so what do you think, Bob? What do you think? Bob goes, Let's talk over dinner. Let's talk over dinner is not a good thing, right?
Right.
So let's talk over dinner. So I get dressed. We go to dinner, and I said, what's up? He says, how do you feel about training for next year's show? I'm like, Bob, I've been training my ass off twice a day for a year for this show. I got to win this show. Well, you look great, but your hamstrings suck, right? He says, and I'm afraid that may prevent you from winning.
Mm.
Well, what do I got to do, right? So, you know, and here's why my hamstrings sucked. Because when Mihalik would do, we would do a 60-set leg workout, right?
Yeah.
And then every time almost, he would be like, I got to go. She had some girl meeting him, whatever. I got to go, you know, I'm going to come back and do hamstrings. You do your hamstrings now.
Yeah.
I get on the leg curl machine and I do that first rep. And as soon as I seen that Corvette pull out, I was out the door because we just finished a 2-hour leg workout.
Right.
I was thinking my hamstrings are good. You know, they're fine. We you know, did all these millions of exercises. I'm good, you know?
Yeah.
And so I got to go. So I literally neglected my hamstrings for a long time.
Yeah.
And then when I left, I trained hamstrings, but they were behind everything else. So Gruskin says, well, you're going to have to train them every day. You know, he goes, you got to get up, you know, train them every day. I go, well, I'm training twice a day now. You know, I was training 7 in the morning, I was training 8 o'clock at night. But I couldn't sleep because I was on I was carb cycling, and you know, on zero carbs, I was like a zombie. So I you know, wide awake, like you want to eat the bed, you know.
Yeah.
And so I was getting up at 3 a.m. I was going to Bally's because Palm Beach Gym was where I work. So I go to Bally's at 3 a.m. and I do hamstrings. Well, I was the only one in the gym. I do hamstrings for about an hour, 45 minutes to an hour every morning. I was doing, but I wasn't training heavy. I was just doing high reps and a lot of squeezing, a lot of tension, a lot of, you know, flexing, a lot of posing every day, every day, every day. So I was training at 3 a.m, coming home, eating breakfast, training at 7 a.m, working a full day, training at 8 p.m. I was doing three workouts a day.
Yeah.
And that was for the last 6 weeks. So I get to the USA and we're backstage and I'm sitting on the floor with Johnny Morant, Troy Zuccolato, Jimmy Quinn. I'm sitting on the floor and the light heavyweights are getting ready to pump up. Rennell Janvier has his trunks on. He bends over to pick up a 25 pound plate to put on the bar. You've seen his hamstrings, right?
Yeah.
Hamstrings.
Yeah. Yeah.
He bends over and I see his ass and it's completely striated. Like if you had Michelangelo with a, you know, an X-Acto knife, it couldn't have looked more defined than what his ass looked like, you know?
Right.
Shredded, hamstring shredded. I looked up, I'm like, a year gone. But you want to know something? Not Lee Haney, not Gasparri, not any of the guys as good as they were. That body part, Rennell owned.
Yeah,
and, you know, when he hit that glute shot, and Gasparri was good. Gasparri was the first one who had striated glutes, you know. But when Rennell that day, when Rennell hit his glutes, it was freaky, you know.
Yeah, I remember it was shocking.
But that was one body part, you know. And although he had a good physique, I don't feel he had enough mass, and you know, he had a couple weaknesses.
Right.
That was my first, you know, sitting there seeing that did not help me, you know. It's
and like, you did a show right before that too, right, John, that year?
I had to qualify.
Okay.
So I went to the Coastal USA and I won that unanimously. That was Doc's show in Georgia.
Yeah.
I won that unanimously, the Coastal USA, and I was good for the Coastal, but I was really peaking. It was 9 weeks before.
Oh, wow.
My on scale weight at the Coastal was 217. I think 216 or 217.
Okay.
USA, the day of the show, I was two. After carbon up, I was 226.
Oh wow, you got bigger. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Did you feel after that first show that did you get some feedback and stuff from the judges? Did you feel like you were on the right track?
Yeah, everything was there, but I just felt like, you know, I could look a little more finished. You know,
yeah.
I was pretty good shape for that show, but I knew what I had to do, and I think that show really helped me because, you know, when you peak early and then you peak, if you hit it right, you're better the second time, you know?
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure.
You know, so.
How'd you feel after the pre-judging? What was the feedback you were getting then?
Bob wouldn't tell me anything really. He was like, I said, what do you think? We'll see. You know, I'm like, you know, you know, it's like, what do you mean, we'll see. I go, you know, I didn't know. I mean, it was hard. I just knew the competition was, you know, Flex Magazine had it as the highest level of competition for a national level show.
Yeah, that's what I read in that article. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, because you had, you know, like I said, Troy, Johnny Zuccolato, Troy Zuccolato, Johnny Morant, you know, Rennell. You had the guy from Texas, great poser. I can't remember his name. He was phenomenal, beautiful shape. I think he turned pro the next year. A lot of pros came out of that show.
Oh, Ronnie Schreier.
Ronnie Schreier.
He just passed away last year.
Are you serious? I didn't even
know. Yeah, he had cancer.
That's terrible.
Yeah, it was terrible.
Yeah, no, we lost a lot of good people.
Yeah.
You know, it's lost a lot of good people.
So how did you feel when it was all over, John? I mean, I remember reading that in the magazines and, you know, I didn't know you at the time, but I'd followed your career. I remember when you were a teenager and I remember you'd been around forever. And I remember you were supposed to do that 82 Nationals. I remember reading that in the magazines like everybody else. So I was like, wow, this is amazing, because it was 5 years since you had last competed and you come out of nowhere after 5 years. And it was just, I thought it was just so inspirational to see that.
You know, I love comebacks, John.
Yeah, I do too.
I hate being like, now I'm training really hard. We're training twice a day. Yesterday we did a 50 set back workout in the morning and did an hour and a half of arms last night. We're hitting it twice a day hard. And I'm flat as heck, because right now I lowered my carbs for a few days, and I like when people don't expect, you know, I don't like to be the favorite. Like in 82, the pressure was too big.
Yeah.
You know, the magazines talking about me and Rory and Defendus and Lita Meyer. And I'm thinking, man, if I go in your show and lose, that's going to suck. And if I go in and win, they're going to go, oh, we expected them to win, you know?
Yeah.
I want to be the guy that they don't think has a chance. And when I came back in 88, people were saying, what, are you kidding me? The guy hasn't even been on stage in 5 years.
He's right. That's what I'm saying. A lot of guys probably didn't even know about you.
Yeah. They really counted me out. That's what I wanted. I didn't want to be, I wanted to be the guy that they didn't expect. And as I was training for it, the news shows were doing some interviews, the local news shows, and they had done some research and they said, well, what do you think about Troy Zuccolato? Cause I think Troy had placed in something the year before. What do you think about this guy? But they specifically mentioned Troy. And I said, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of great bodybuilders out there. I said, but I am going to be the best that John Defendus can be on that day. And I feel that my best will be the best.
Yeah.
And that was my attitude. I didn't look at anybody else. I didn't think about anybody else at that point. I said, I knew what I was capable of. And I knew if I was in my absolute best shape, because of my shape, that I would win, that I could win the show, you know?
Yeah.
And then, that was, you know, a big thing. And just like now, you know, 64 years old and, you know, I got friends telling me, hey, you know, you're 64, you can't expect to look good. You know, now, you know, you're older, you know, I don't buy that. You know, I'm not going to buy it. You know, I feel I got one more good shot, not to compete, but I want to get some really great photos.
Yeah.
Looking really good. And I want to be able to hit that vacuum, and I know I can.
Yeah,
hit the vacuum where it's comparable, you know.
Yeah.
And that's a big goal of mine, you know. To you know, and I'm working hard towards that, because I'm doing pullovers like it's going out of style.
Oh, that's awesome. I didn't know you were getting ready for some photos.
Yeah,
that's
cool. I just want to do some photos and some videos. I want to do some training videos. I think if there's the biggest thing that I regret, and really I couldn't help it because they didn't really have, you know, the options that they have today.
Right.
I regret not having our training on film.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Because it was, you can't even explain it. I mean, you know, even when I was 47, you know, I did 5 sets of squats, 4 of them with 500 for 20 reps. Then I was cycling 1,600-pound leg presses with 600 on a hack squat, which the stack on the extension nonstop, 12 wow. reps on each. And every time I got back to that leg press, I'm getting under 1600 pounds after doing the other, you know, 600. And that, you know, I wasn't thinking. And thankfully I have pictures of it. I don't have video. I wish I had video, but I have pictures of it.
Yeah.
And I look at the pictures. I say to myself, you know, thank God, you know, I got those pictures, because it's such a memory, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Even at that age of 47. But it was funny because there was 3 guys in the gym that were pretty jacked up, you know, and they're in the gym training, 3 decent guys. And after the workout, after I finished that workout, I was in a zone. I didn't even know anyone existed. I'm drenched and I'm getting ready to go to the locker room. And there's 3 guys come over to me. And one guy says, excuse me, Mr. Defendus, what the hell was that? I go, what do you mean? He says, man, I never seen that. I never seen anybody train like that before. That was scary, man. It's, you know, you getting under that weight, man. That's crazy, you know?
Yeah.
I said, well, thank you. He said, but, you know, we got one question for you. I said, yeah. He said, what are you listening to in your Walkman? I had a Walkman, right?
Yeah.
With the belt, right?
Yeah.
You know, 'cause I'm cycling, right? So right. I got I got a Walkman with the belt, the Sony yellow, the bright yellow Walkman, you know, you can, you know, waterproof, whatever. but it was a disc player, right?
Yeah.
Not the cassette, but the disc.
Right.
So I got the Sony disc Walkman, whatever. So what are you listening to, man? We got to know what you're listening to, you know? So I take the belt off and, so what do you think it is? Man, the one guy said, it's got to be like Def Leppard, you know? Yeah, Metallica, man. Metallica, right? So I open up the disc, and he sees it. The three guys see it, and they're like, you got to be shitting me. Kelly Clarkson? So they go, you did that workout to Kelly Clarkson? How is that even possible, right? So I said, I'll tell you how it's possible. This is after Kelly Clarkson won the American Idol.
Yeah.
I said, a friend of mine had a ticket to Kelly Clarkson, front row ticket. He wasn't going to use it. He said, you want to go? He said, you can have my ticket. I took the ticket. I went to the concert, sat in the front row. This is when she was in good shape. She was beautiful, passionate. Yeah. She comes out on stage like a steamroller, blaring, just passion like you can't even imagine. And I said, let me tell you guys something about life. Life is about passion. Passion is what controls your energy. The passion controls your power. You know, to me, tremendous passion creates tremendous power. And when I saw that passion, it drove me to be, that's the kind of passion you need to accomplish anything.
Right.
If you're that passionate about anything, you're going to be successful.
Yeah.
So I tell these guys, so when I hear the music, it just, in my mind, it's creating passion. It's reminding me of that passion, and it's fulfilling me, with passion to be able to drive harder.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter who's passionate about what. Could be about music. Could be about, dance. Could be about, just anything.
Right.
But if they have that passion, they will succeed because it drives it. It creates power, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. John, one last thing before I let you go. I know you talk about a lot of these bodybuilders today. And I mean, your last, that show that you won was in 88. So that was quite a while ago. So where do you think the direction of bodybuilding is going? And where do you think it changed?
Well, it definitely changed with Dorian. I think Dorian, yeah. I don't even think it was Ronnie. I think it was Dorian.
Yeah.
When Dorian came in, I was not a fan. I mean, I respect Dorian. I didn't like the look. I didn't like, and even Mensur, I didn't care. Like, people love Mensur. A lot of people love Mensur. I didn't like Mensur's look.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of things I didn't like about that. I felt he steered a lot of people wrong with the one set thing, he built his body on higher sets. I know he didn't do one set, and then the whole Nautilus experiment was, let's face it. You take a guy who's taking stuff, you take him off it, he takes a layoff, and then he gets on it. Anything he does is going to bring back the muscle he lost,
Yeah. The Colorado experiment.
Yeah. So I look at that. And I don't buy it, for what they promote it to be. It was great for promoting Nautilus, and I'm sure, Arthur Jones did well with it.
Yeah.
Because he brought them out and did that with them. But I find that Dorian was the big change, and then Ronnie, I respect Ronnie, but it just wasn't I want to look at somebody as a bodybuilder and say, that's what I want to look like,
mm-hmm.
And Dave Draper was that guy. Arnold was that guy. Arnold was massive, but not too massive like some of the guys today, but still had that incredible shape,
Yeah.
And I was all about shape, Samir Banood. I love Dave Draper, but Dave Draper really, he was really my idol growing up because he had, with the headband, he was the cool guy,
Yeah, yeah.
And I wanted to be like Dave, Eventually we became good friends. I had Dave come out to Arizona, do a seminar for us. Phenomenal guy, rest in peace. He's a great champion, but, But I found that, you know, Arnold, Samir Benoit, Francis Benfato.
Yeah.
I like Francis's physique. I think he had a great physique. You know, Sean Ray, I like Sean's physique. Sean had a good physique.
Yeah.
Yeah, those you know, some of the top ones, I feel. Lee Labrada was good.
I mean, they talk about, like, bodybuilding has progressed, you know, over the decades. And a lot of people look at progression as they're getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Now, when you were younger and you were training, I'm sure you wanted to get as big as possible. Mihalik wanted to get as big as possible, too. So everybody wanted to get as big as possible. But we also had in mind the shape, right? It also had to be – that was part of the whole picture.
Quality was everything. Everything. Matter of fact, even when I left Mihalik, I became very calculated with the workouts. The workouts – what I did after Mihalik was the only thing that resembled Mihalik's workouts was the volume and the intensity, you know?
Yeah.
I changed the order of the exercises. Everything is very calculated, very specific. The rep range – you know, pullovers maybe 20 to 25, where your presses, your incline presses 6 to 8. You know, yeah. I have a specific rep range for everything. So when people say, do you have light days? Do you have heavy days? No, every day is a hard day.
And
every day includes heavy and moderate, depends on what the exercise is, you know.
Right.
So I got very calculated with the workouts, but the intensity level was always there and always will be. Even now, you know, it's, you know, I still, you know, I can't do the things I did, but I can train intense, you know?
Yeah.
And sometimes it's detrimental because at this age, your body doesn't recover. So, you know, you got to be a little more, you know, calculated, a little more careful. And, but, you know, I'll take a run with any 20-year-old, you know. Mm-hmm. I got guys, you know, guys in the gym that, you know, mouth off, they think, you know, I go to the gym and these guys walking around like this and I'll pay him a compliment. Hey man, you're looking good. And some of them like, you're like, hey, old man, you know, like they give me that. You know, it's like, you know, and at that point, I just want to go, look, I look better than you did when I was 16 years old, man. You know, knock that chip off your shoulder, you know? And,
right.
You know, a lot of the guys today, they diet. Everyone knows they're dieting because they got this bad attitude.
Yeah.
You know, if I had a bad attitude and I was dieting, I went in my office, I closed the door, I sat in there a little bit, I cooled off, and then I came out and greeted people because that's your business. You still have to show up for the people that are investing in your business. And people care about you, you know. You can't act like, you know, you're not curing cancer, bro. You're training for a contest.
Yeah.
You know? It's like, you know, a lot of these guys, they, you know, they train for a contest. They think that the world revolves around them, you know.
And
it doesn't, you know. It's, you know, if you want to do your thing, do your thing. Just don't affect other people.
Right.
And I love people that commit to a goal. Like our clients, you'll see me cheering on the clients all day long. And I'm there for them every minute of the day and answering hundreds of questions every day because I understand, and you do too, John, the commitment it takes to go into a gym, to get those workouts in, to get that food in, and then to still make a living around it.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of work and a lot of commitment. And I never want to fail anybody, you know,
especially
if they're investing in our program and our trainers, you know, I want to make sure that, you know, they come away going, you know what, they gave me everything I needed to succeed. And the rest is on them. You know, they gotta make the commitment.
Absolutely. All right, John. Well, thanks for joining us again on the show. It's always a pleasure having you on. I love your stories because they're so inspiring. And I love that story of that USA comeback. That was so inspirational. So it was great to hear you talk more about it. But I always love having you on because you definitely still have the passion and the inspiration. So that's what bodybuilding is all about, right?
Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate it, John. I tell you something. In closing, I want to commend you for an incredible career. I mean,
thank you, John.
You to develop the physique you've developed and natural, and just the contest you won, win the Natural Olympia, and phenomenal. You know, and you know, all the work you've done and all the people you've inspired. You know, thank you for on behalf of everybody. Thank you. You know.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that, John. Well, we'll have you back on the show again, John. It's maybe we'll have you on with your buddy, Tom. He always mentions you every time we have him on.
Tom's great. Great champion. Tom is the iron that sharpened me, I have to say. He still does.
Yeah.
He's always on his game. I give Tommy a lot of credit. Never stops.
Yeah. All right, John. Well, thanks for taking time out of your day to join us again. And I look forward to talking to you again soon, buddy.
Sounds great, John. Thank you very much.
Take care. Bye. All right. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thanks again to my guest, John Defendis, for coming on the show to talk about the 1988 MPC USA win and one of the greatest comebacks in bodybuilding history. John is always a great guest. All right. I'm going to read this article that came from the December 1988 issue of Flex magazine, and it's called High Stakes Gamble. It was written by Julian Schmidt. Julian Schmidt was a big writer for Joe Weider for Muscle and Fitness and Flex magazine. It says, with your first glance at the roster, you could hear the click of the ratchet cinching up the standards of bodybuilding another notch. From bantamweights through light heavyweights, scales were teetering precariously at class limits under the onus of rolling muscle density and screaming striations that would shutter your teeth loose if you happened to drive over them. Incredulity and audible audience gasps, but the consistently superior quality of these athletes spoke of the crossing of a new frontier that has left the term amateur hopelessly obviated. When such burgeoning superstars as the gifted and adamantine Troy Zuccolato are beaten, and Jim Quinn can fare no better than fifth at a rock-solid 246 pounds, and the renowned DeMarco Blue does not even finish in the top five of the heavyweights, when the class of Ronnie Schweier and the mass of Glenn Kinnear can't snag the light heavyweight title, and when middleweight Stoney Lee Grimes brings in a shape that would have stolen the show a year ago but is relegated to fourth this time, you know that bodybuilding is not in Kansas anymore, Toto. Vegas odds made things even tougher from the sheer quantity of 150 superb male competitors guaranteeing bodybuilding an exciting future that will perpetrate the setting of old scores for some time to come. Indeed, faithful camps have already formed in favor of their idols, bumping chest for such causes as Defendis versus Zuccolato or Jerry Rogers versus Bob Chicarillo versus Jim Quinn or Javier versus Schweier versus Kinnear. But the battle need not reach Armageddon, for the issue here is not so much individual superiority as collective improvement. Across the board, the 1988 MPC Men's U.S. Championships did bodybuilding proud, softening the brazen kitsch of the City of Lights with the proud glow of professionalism. The officials of this contest want to announce that this is the highest caliber of male contestants they have ever seen in a national-level contest, came the word over the loudspeaker. And the commodious main ballroom of the Sands Hotel, gridlocked with a standing room only audience from every corner of the nation, told of the high regard these competitors were commanding. Even Mr. T in his customary Klieg light costume and macho fan Chuck Norris were only two more anonymous heads in the sea of nameless faces. Neither was this contest worthy of only perfunctory coverage in ESPN's Big Eye, when a ballroom power failure deprived two light heavyweights of a second or two of their presentations. Contest officials said it was unfortunate, but they had seen enough by this pair anyway, thank you, and the show must go on. ESPN, however, hadn't, and they overruled the officials. So Frank Santoriello and Ronnie Schweier were called upon to reprise their routines. There were no moans of monotony from the crowd. Instead, the reaction was one of more the better, because it's difficult to get too much of Santoriello's scary mass or Schweier's perfection and grace. As for the competitors, only one face momentarily blanched with disappointment when the trophies were presented, and that was handled with exemplary sang-froid and went undetected by the audience. The only reason I noticed was because I was looking for it. He had, after all, been favored. Even the crowd reached another level of maturity. Sure, during the Saturday morning men's prejudging, you could still hear the belch and growl of vestigial groundlings when a girl in the audience screamed at a male competitor, "Hey, show us your shit up there." And another snarled, "All right, Michael, be cocky up there, be cocky." But in the evening, you heard only the reverberations of healthy cheers, still more evidence that bodybuilding has come of age. That John Defendis chose this USA as his comeback statement speaks volumes of its esteem. In 83, after winning the Western America in Los Angeles, Defendis from Delray Beach, Florida, withdrew from the competition, vowing that he would never step on stage unless he attained professional caliber condition. If that meant never competing again, so be it. But at least his standards would never be compromised. "I virtually retired for 5 years, John told Flex after the contest. "While I continued to train and continued to improve, working especially hard on my weak areas, I didn't know if I'd ever compete again.
But finally, this year, everything clicked. I felt confident, and I felt I could do it. So for the last 6 months before the contest, I actually lived and breathed the USA. To test the waters and requalify, John won the Coastal USA in Atlanta, Georgia, 2.5 months before this contest. It was far from the prestige of the U.S. championships, but John knew that now he had no weak body parts, and his presentation had been polished to mesmeric elegance. More than a decade of competing began to show in John. On stage, he was every inch the experienced, confident, fully prepared champion. Calm, proud, eager to be there, his physique massive and classically shaped, though his steely will had seen to it that everything finally fit. Yet, as Schopenhauer observed, man can always do what he wills to do, but he cannot determine what he wills. That's a caveat that applied especially to this USA, for descending on Las Vegas were hordes of horrendous heavyweight class threats, many of whom had already chipped off their share of the bodybuilding rock. From the state of New York came tall, impressive Bob Chicarillo with his chilling, sweeping back. Symmetrical John DeMartino and big, bad Jim Quinn, whose reputation doesn't need to precede him. Heavily armed Johnny Morant rolled in from New Jersey, and from down the coast came Johnny Ray Kinsey from North Carolina, Robert Rothrock from Mississippi, and Larry Dufick from Miami. Harry Johnson came in from the Great Lakes, Oklahoma delegated Jeff Sneed, and the Rocky Mountains appropriately offered up massive Nathan Poole and Mark Diamond. The California flank was a wellspring of talent with the likes of huge 1988 LA champ DeMarco Blue, giant Jerry Rogers, and the co-star of the show, Troy Zuccolato, third in the heavyweight class at the 87 Nationals and substantially better here. To nearly all eyes but Bill Reynolds and the judges, Zook the Nuke had it won. He was spectacular, a veritable rock slide of muscularity. Michelangelo's wildest dream, shredded at 230, the man who has already made traps, delts, calves, and jackhammered abs household words. How could he lose, we all wondered. Defendus felt he had the answer. Troy has a tremendous physique, and I respect him a great deal. He's definitely worked hard, and he's done very good in lots of national shows. His strong points are his abs and his muscularity, but I feel I won over Troy because of symmetry and presentation. My presentation, I feel, has more polished, and I didn't have any weak points. Obviously, the judges saw the same, giving Defendus a unanimous first, a phenomenal tribute in the context of his competitors. Troy, however, couldn't have been far behind, receiving solid seconds and one stray third-place vote. Morant likewise secured third by the same dominance, followed by Jerry Rogers in fourth, both of whom were capable of reshuffling the top four places if they'd come in with a few more cuts. Jim Quinn, fifth, was surprisingly sharp for his mass. If he can broaden his back, the entire hierarchy will come tumbling down. A scant 2 points behind Quinn in sixth was DeMarco Blue, now one of the three most consummate bodybuilders on the threshold of professional status. He had the height, the size, and the presentation to carry the audience. Abdominals are all he needs to strike fear in the hearts of leading pros. Don't think of heavyweight positions 7 through 15 as also rants. They have made noise before and will do so again, especially since they consisted of, in order, Mark Diamond, Bob Chicarillo, Robert Rothrock, Larry Dufick, Johnny Ray Kinsey, Jeff Sneed, Harry Johnson, Nathan Poole, and John DeMartino. But the ripples across the country for days afterward carried the names of Defendus and Zuccolato, and the inevitable controversy will continue to rage. Defendus, however, has a clear conscience. In the prejudging, I felt I had Troy mainly because of my shape, but I really hadn't seen anybody in any of the other classes, so I wasn't sure about the overall. Such was Defendus's wisdom and caution. Had he witnessed the light heavyweight class, his demonstrative confidence might have acquired an edge of anxiety. In terms of relative mass and spellbinding routines, the light heavy stole the show, running the gamut from refinement to brutal power in physiques with routines that included unadulterated compulsories, fluid choreography, breakdancing, and robot mimicry. This is the stuff that will raise couch potatoes to their feet when they see it on ESPN. And it is the stuff that will elevate bodybuilding out of its public image as a one-dimensional muscle show into recognition as an entertainment event. Signs are good. Cheers were as plagiant for posing as they were for the muscles. And the muscles were world-class. Renelle Jambier, whose gallery included Mike Quinn, had serrate shreds upon layers of striations among huge mounds of muscle. There seemed no end to the, oh my God, look at that, exclamations when he flexed even the most isolated body part. No one in the contest exhibited as much body tissue activity. Rennell can legitimately be called a phenomenon. And along Press Row, there was mounting advocacy for him to take the overall. Rennell, it was obvious, was serious about this contest. Too serious, perhaps. Toward the end of the prejudging callouts, he collapsed, out cold, backstage, and a full 2 minutes were required to revive him. Maybe it was his miscalculated pre-show dehydration. Maybe it was the stress of the event. Maybe a combination of factors. But he rebounded courageously to claim first place for the evening show. But not without a formidable challenge from a young man who had proved that bodybuilding had not known its upper limits of sophistication until his arrival. Ronnie Schweier from Bedford, Texas, dignifies bodybuilding as no other competitor in the sport today. Physically, his symmetry left even his worthy adversaries out of Las Vegas's limelight, and it appears inevitable that the classic form immortalized by Frank Zane will soon be eclipsed by Schweier. He has the muscle, the shape, the skin, and the look, but his preeminence soars when he wraps it in a powerful style of his routine. Sit back and enjoy it, and when he's finished, you feel refreshed. Where so many others strain and grimace to pop their muscularity, Schweier's incessant smile reflects nothing but ease and pleasure. He is a natural, smooth, fluid, effortless, yet proudly masculine. No wasted movements, no gimmicks, just a keen sense of stage presence and an intuitive sense of grace, and loving every minute of it. Schweier, in fact, tallied 2 first place votes, but placed substantially higher in respect. Third place, Franco Santoriello of Toms River, New Jersey, was easily the most massive competitor in this USA Championships, and it was more than just mere indistinct bulk. He was solidly separated and had the forbearance during the blackout to grin and take it in stride, displaying the maturity so characteristic of the entire class. So prominent was Santoriello's size that during the prejudging lineup, I arose from my front row seat and walked to the back of the auditorium for the opposite perspective. From that distance, faces were indistinguishable, but Santoriello's silhouette became even more prominent, appearing as much as twice the size of any other bodybuilder on stage while giving up very little in definition. You gotta love it. Benny Pota, the pit bull of bodybuilding, sunk his teeth into this contest and huffed and puffed and sweat and foamed his way to fourth place among light heavyweights. That's no small potatoes in a field of 44 tooth and nail bodybuilders representing the toughest class in the event. The Benny Pota show may not be pretty to the pinky finger aesthetites in the crowd, but to those who value the eternal verities of muscle and power, the beast from the East is beautiful. His thick midsection is twisted and gnarled. His legs could shore up freeway overpass, and his traps tumble all the way from his ears to his delts. When Benny sees that title on the line, he paws the dirt and fights for it to the death. And his scrappy, indomitable desire leaves you with an inspired affection and a sharp lament for a bodybuilding style we should never have let escape. So fearsome was Benny's drive that he relegated the excellent Glenn Kinnear to fifth position. Glenn has been a comer lately, as well as a crowd favorite, and here in Vegas, he was as hard as granite and close to his peak. His time will come. Filling out 6th through 15th in the light heavyweight class were Deke Warner, Luis Dovidio, Carl Panabiago, Nicholas Lavatola, Robert Wallace, Kevin Hall, James Hampton, Snake Adger, Bob Jockowitz, and Kurt Hayes. With his size, shape, and definition, 176.5-pound Kevin McGunn pulled off a unanimous first in the middleweight class, which has an upper limit of 176.25 pounds. His symmetry mirrors a scaled-down John Defendus, too much for even second-place Anthony Civiletti's mass or third-place John Sherman's balance. Stoney Lee Grimes, however, was a Steve Reeves clone and had the best midsection in the class. During prejudging, he was a front runner, but by the end of the evening was left with the fourth place trophy. John Otwork's dominant back and legs nailed down fifth. 6th through 15th among the middleweights were Luke Tesfitch, Quincy Roberts, Joseph Dawson, Robert Augustin, Jamie Giampa, Abraham Tadassi, Jay Bonat, Phil Pertut, Mark Natalie, and Charles Durr. In the lightweight class, first place, Alan Inchonese was up more than 10 pounds from his bantamweight of 2 years ago, all of its solid muscle that shouts out the influence of his powerlifting training partners. Only prodigious strength, such as his near 500-pound bench at 160 pounds, can build such mass as Allen's, and it paid off here. Voting was close for positions 2, 3, and 4, and they finally fell to Guy Ducasey, Alvin Mitch Chambers, and Jim Walker, respectively, with Robert Frongian holding on to 5th. 6th through 15th were Eddie Fregwire, Jay Matlock, Khalil El-Amin, Alan Matoka, Mark George, Nara Howard, David Goodman, Scott Wade, Michael Neal, and Grant Ledbetter. John Schnecksnader pulled off an extra dimension of quality to take the bantamweight class. Even though he was the lightest in his class, nearly 12 pounds under the limit, his shredded muscularity, sweeping back, and excellent presentation denied the assault of big, balanced, but slightly less ripped Robert Coquero and Earl Snyder, 2nd and 3rd, respectively. David Wilson Jr. demonstrated remarkable mass to take 4th, and Matthew Alloy secured 5th. 6th through 15th among the bantamweights were Greg Cerizo, Paul DiCursio, Paul McCollin, Matthew Arena, Carl Laparose, John Buchholz, Richard Delvecchio, Paul Putnam, Ken Magida, and Dave Fuji. So when John DeFendis looked to his right in the overall lineup and was met with the physiques of Ronel Janvier, Kevin McGunn, Alan Ichonese, and John Schnecksnader, he knew the toughest contest was about to begin. DeFendis was suddenly more serious than ever, especially standing next to Javier, and his determination cranked up to a new level. He asserted his quality, he flaunted his shape and muscularity, and his jaw-set intensity, he told the judges he wanted it. When they gave it to him, he knew he had earned it. "I feel the competition was one of the best I've ever seen on a national show," said DeFendis later. "That makes me happy. I wanted it to be like that. I feel good coming out of the USA as a winner because there were so many people capable of winning it. It was the spear of truth that pierced, finally, the shield of invulnerability," and John DeFendis sighed with relief. "It could have gone 10 different ways." All right. Good article. Yeah, Julian Schmidt was an amazing writer. It's like you have to have a dictionary to read this because his vocabulary was amazing. But great article. Sad to hear about Ronnie Schwier, to read about him because he just passed away last year. And also Robert Rothrock, who was also mentioned in the heavyweight. Robert won the Junior Nationals, I believe, in 1990, and Robert just passed away. I just saw it on Facebook. He just passed away about a week ago. I think it was from cancer. So rest in peace to Robert. He was only about 60 years old. And they also mentioned Stoney Lee Grimes, who we just interviewed a couple of weeks ago, and that shows you how great Stoney's physique was. He said he was the reincarnation of Steve Reeves, so that's a hell of a compliment. But yeah, the competition back then was absolutely amazing. My friend Glenn Kinnear, who we've had on the show before, who I grew up with in Chicago. Glenn was about 4 years older than me. I was a big fan of his when I was a teenager. He was 5th in the light heavyweights. And I remember he's still pissed off about Benny Pota beating him because he thought Benny had no shape at all. So Glenn talked about that the last time I talked to him. He said that was such a ripoff. But anyways, great article, great competition. And congratulations to John DeFendis for pulling that off. Great win for him. I'm sure he'll remember that for the rest of his life. All right, guys, that is it. Next week, the Bodybuilding Legends podcast will be celebrating its 5th anniversary. So we'll have some clips from the past 5 years, some of my favorites. And we might do that for a week. We might do that for a couple of weeks. We'll see how it works out in the editing. But that will be next week on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I hope you guys have a great 4th of July. Keep training hard. Stay safe. And we'll see you guys next week. Take care.